Welcome to Strong Tower Radio Today. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily reflect the views of Strong Tower Radio, West Central Michigan Media Ministries, or its employees.
Hi folks, I'm Jelaine Fenner, and welcome to Strong Tower Radio Today with my co-host,
Tom Mazur.
And Tom, it's April, National Child Abuse Prevention Month. And in our studio, we have with us Karen Staub, who is with the Wexford-Missaukee Child Protection Council. And Karen, your job title is Prevention Coordinator.
Correct, yes.
Okay. What does Prevention Coordinator mean?
So as the Prevention Coordinator for our council, I kind of lead our council in the work that we do through outreach, education, and awareness within the community. On issues surrounding child abuse and neglect. And we talk about ways that we can prevent it before it happens. Oh, okay. So we are very focused on that primary prevention piece.
Okay. And Tom, last year we had Karen here, and I don't know if our listeners remember that April is National Child Abuse Prevention Month.
That's right. Child abuse covers many subjects, and one thing that Karen has educated us as a community, that it has lifelong effects. Yep. And that if you can prevent this here, child abuse in childhood, of course, that lifelong problems are avoided many
right.
times.
Okay. Well, before we get started, why don't you have a word of prayer?
Thank you. Our great Heavenly Father, you said, bid the children to come unto me, and to forbid them not, for such is the kingdom of heaven. You had a very special love for children, and we need to too. Mm. Help us as individuals, as society, as churches, to protect our children, to uplift them, to encourage them for a lifelong service, and be with our listeners and help our topics to be appropriate and to be encouraging. Yes. In Jesus' name, amen.
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 Karen, the word child abuse elicits emotional response in most good people, but are we all talking about the same thing?
Most of the time, I think we are. I think we are a very caring society, but we're also a very reactionary society. We tend to react to things when we see them happening. And when you talk about prevention of something, it's really difficult to see because you don't really know what's happening. So talking about child abuse prevention before it ever happens becomes a really difficult thing. But when you talk about child abuse, you're talking about so many different levels, whether it's physical, emotional, sexual, psychological, or neglect as well. There's so many different layers to it. And that primary prevention piece of preventing it before it happens is really super important, because there are there's a lot of brain development. All of our brain development is starting from birth, okay? So as we are young children, if we're going through any of those situations, it is greatly impacting our brain development, which then has this lifelong effect, both mental and physical-wise. So the best thing to do is to prevent it before it happens.
Okay. So I know last year we had you here, and we talked about ACEs. That's a way to kind of find out what people, or especially children, have in their experience, their life. What would you explain? That's an acronym. What does that stand for?
Yep. ACEs stands for Adverse Childhood Experiences, and it talks about different types of experiences that can be experienced in early childhood that result in a chronic stress state, and that chronic stress leads to the childhood trauma. that we're talking about. And once it reaches that chronic state, then that's when you start having a lot of problems. And it can be things like all of those levels of child abuse that we're talking about, but can also be things like drug abuse in the home, or a parent who has mental illness, or even situations like parents going through a divorce, or having a parent who's incarcerated or something like that. Any event that happens that has a chronic stress level on a child leads to that toxic trauma state for them. Those are the type of things that we're talking about when we talk about ACEs.
So I'm just thinking about, you know, adverse childhood experiences, thinking about when I was a kid, had nothing to do with maybe adults, but other kids, you know, like the mean girls, or being bullied. I mean, those are adverse childhood experiences.
They absolutely are. And they those experiences can come from other places outside the home as well. There's different levels of trauma that a child or a family can experience, whether it's from abuse or neglect. It can be from something like the death of a loved one, those type of things. If there's maybe ongoing medical treatment that the child is undergoing.
Or the parent is exactly. not able to function because of a medical condition.
Exactly. Anything that changes that safety level of the child in the home, that safe, stable, nurturing relationship that you want your child surrounded by, anything that changes that type of environment has the ability to build up in a child and make that chronic stress level kind of take hold, and then you start talking about the levels of trauma.
Let me ask a couple of questions here. You said a chronic, is it a chronic response to an event, or could that, or is that event ongoing and chronic that's the cause of this stress? Or there could be a one-time traumatic lifelong impact which has chronic effects.
Exactly. It could be both. It could be something that's happening repeatedly, or it can be something that just happens once. And the thing of it is it could be the same thing within a family, and one child may be greatly affected by it and another may not. We don't know. And that's why having, you know, all those eyes on the kids and on their families and being supportive of them is a really super important thing to do when we're talking about primary prevention.
You know, as we're talking, all of a sudden, situations that I'm aware of, I think that all of our listeners are aware of traumatic experiences that happen to children.
Mm-hmm.
I know of a situation that the mother and the father, this is 50 years ago, but the person is still suffering from it. The mother and father are threatening each other bodily,
mm-hmm.
almost, and such, and that child saw that and has never really met its full potential or hits these now adult. I think about another thing, go to my father particularly. He had many surgeries, and his parents sent him down to Ann Arbor from Kalamazoo, and his parents never visited him. An uncle and aunt dropped him off, and he was there for weeks at a time.
Okay.
My heart just aches when I think about that situation. So there's multiple traumas that take place.
There absolutely is.
Yeah. Well, and then thinking about your dad, your parents at the time were probably doing the best they could. They knew how.
They didn't have a car, and they had other children at home.
Yeah.
And
but that child, I mean, he had to have surgery. He was neglected then.
Yes.
That's, you know.
Yeah.
And that is a form of child abuse nowadays when we think about
neglect, which has an abuse effect.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
But then we're talking about, because that's your job, is kind of prevention.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's another thing we can think about, because there is hope.
Yes.
And that is a acronym. So tell us about what HOPE stands for.
Yeah, it is. So when we work within the community, we work to try to bring the community to be trauma-informed. So becoming trauma-informed just means having that heightened awareness and education around the prevalence and impact of child abuse and how it can lead to trauma. So that ACEs model is one model, I guess, if you will. But there's another model. It's called HOPE. And HOPE stands for Healthy Outcomes Through Positive Experiences. And that model looks at those positive childhood experiences that we have the ability to build around children and around families, and actually really around our communities as a whole. And the effects that they have on the traumas and the chronic stress that a child or family may be experiencing. And all of the research under that model shows that the more positive experiences that a child has, the more healthy, stable adult relationships that they have around them, even if they do experience those traumas, whether they're from child abuse and neglect or from other things like a medical trauma, like Tom was talking about, or something like that, that those positive childhood experiences that are built around that family have the ability to mitigate the effects of those traumas. So that's why that HOPE model is really important to look at as well, and make sure that we know that yes, things happen, and sometimes they're things that are out of our control, but we have the ability to kind of wrap around the children and wrap around the families and give them support. And that's why the work that we do in the community with the primary prevention, our message all the time as April has been mentor, advocate, donate, because it gives three specific things that everybody can be doing on a daily basis to prevent that abuse and neglect before it happens. And, you know, when we talk about mentoring, we're talking about not just mentoring a child, but maybe mentoring a parent or a family as well. Being there for one another and supporting one another, giving each other the grace at times to just say, you know, wow, you're having a rough time, a rough moment. What can I do? How can I help? And even if it's, you know, simple things like taking them a dinner or taking them some cookies or watching their kids for an hour or something like that, those kind of things help families just beyond measure. And advocating for child-friendly policies, whether it's through our government agencies, our schools, our communities, whatever they may be, and then donating. You know, not everyone has the means to donate monetarily, but you can also donate your time and your expertise and those type of things to like community events that are going on or even directly to families. So that mentor, advocate, donate message is something very, very specific that we can all do every day.
Well, and I was just thinking about, you know, the positive child experience versus the, you know, adverse child experience. And you brought up about being mentoring. Even just talking with a child and giving them positive things to think about, or just talking and listening to a child sometimes.
Exactly. You know, yeah. We all want to be heard, right? Yeah. We all need that human connection. We all want to be heard. We all want to be understood, no matter how young we are or how old we are. You know, we all have a very positive place in this world. And I think we all need to be shown that on really a daily basis.
Let's get a little bit more into the specifics. We're talking at high level of the HOPE format, but let's take that mentoring. What would mentoring look like? What are different applications of mentoring?
Well, with mentoring, you can do things specifically one-on-one with a child. There are mentoring programs that people can get involved in, and after April, we usually get a couple of calls. I'll get a couple of emails that say, hey, you know, I heard your message and I've always thought about being a mentor, but I don't know what to do. I don't know how to do it. So, I mean, it's so great to get those calls because I can connect them with a local mentoring agency and get them involved and, you know, get them on a path that they were always thinking about and with helping a child and helping a family. So that direct mentoring is one thing. They can also mentor a family. You know, like I said, knowing that, you know, your neighbor or something like that needs an extra hand or, you know, my daughter and son-in-law last year, they had our newest grandchild who was born at 25 weeks premature. They are both very, just very capable individuals, and it totally changed them. And I just saw all the help that they needed at the time. And they have a really close set of friends who live really close to them who just stepped in without even being asked. They started feeding their pets, dropping off meals. They sent over a cleaning service while they were in the hospital. Just all kinds of different things, like whatever we can think of to do to help out. And it was just beyond belief the help that it was to them, that they didn't have to think about those little things sometimes, you know. So those type of things, and making sure, you know, we can also like volunteer in our community if there's something that people want to do or ways that they want to help. We have so many organizations and agencies that are out there in our community, and we actually have a new resource directory that's online. If people are either looking for a resource or maybe to find a resource for someone who needs one, that's a really great way to mentor someone. But people can go online and look at WexfordMisaukeeDirectory.org and find just about anything they're looking for any age level.
So if our listeners who are throughout the state of Michigan and beyond, would they contact their local public school and say, how can I mentor at the school?
Yep. So throughout the state of Michigan, what I do and what our council does for Wexford and Misaukee County, there is a me in every county throughout the entire state of Michigan.
I didn't know there were so many of you.
I know, right?
I was going to say, what do you mean a me?
A me, yes. Yeah. There is a
coordinator.
Yes, a coordinator. There's someone who operates as a prevention partner under the state's Children Trust Michigan. The state level Children Trust Michigan organization is the one that all of the counties fall under. So there is someone in every county that works towards primary prevention of child abuse.
That is a great takeaway from today's program.
So if somebody, because we have people even in Illinois, but all over the state of Michigan, what they'd have to go online, what are they looking for?
So Children Trust Michigan just recently changed their name. It was Children's Trust Fund, and I'm not 100% sure they've changed their website yet. So they would either go to Children's Trust Fund of Michigan or Children Trust Michigan.
So they could Google.
Yeah, sure.
And it would
absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Yep. And they can look up their specific county and it would give them a contact number and person for that specific county. Yep. And that's in Michigan. And I believe every state in the nation has some type of organization that focuses specifically on primary prevention, because as states, then we all fall under the national Prevent Child Abuse America. So that's how kind of things fall down.
Yeah. Okay.
So I believe there is an organization in every state as well. It's just named different. So sometimes just takes a little bit of digging, but I think we're good at that lately.
Well, the idea is prevention.
Exactly.
Because Tom, you had alluded to this about, you know, some of you know 50 years ago that just saw their parents fighting and maybe physically fight, and how it affected that person even now 50 years later.
Yeah. And there, you know, I do want to let you know, too, that when you're talking about, what is child abuse and what do we do, how do we recognize it, there is an 800 number to report suspected abuse and neglect. And that number for Michigan is 855-444-3911. So if someone suspects abuse or neglect, they will call that number to make a report. The reports are anonymous. And I tell people, because I'm a mandated reporter trainer for the state as well, and I just tell people when they ask me, like, what should I report? If something doesn't feel right, report it. Put it into the hands of the people who are doing the investigating and let it be investigated. And many times situations of neglect won't get protective services out to open a case. But if this is chronic neglect that's going on, I tell people, keep reporting it. If you keep seeing something within a family, just keep reporting it. And they have to then take that report and do the investigation to see whether a case would be open or not. But the other thing with that is to know that anybody can make a report, even a child can make a report. And we make sure that we tell, especially teenagers, you know, when we're giving them this information, these reports are taken seriously. We're not talking about picking up the phone because you've had a fight with mom and dad or you disagree with the discipline, you know, that they're handing down. That's not what this number is for. This is for if you or a member of your family or even a friend of yours, you know something is going on in that home, to put it in the hands of somebody who can investigate it.
Okay, and that number, this is the Michigan?
Yes.
Not national?
Nope, this is the statewide number. Yep, and that's that 855-444-3911 is the centralized intake number.
Okay.
And that's both for children and adult protective services as well.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, because sometimes you can see something and you're just wondering.
Yeah.
And you don't do anything.
Yeah.
And then there's something on the news how bad something really happened.
Yeah. And those are the times, you know, once you see something on the news, those are the times when we all want to jump into action and how can we help? So if we can kind of shift that feeling of how can we help to preventing it before it happens. And I will get calls at home, you know, often of, hey, you know, this is kind of going on or I'm hearing this all the time next door. What do you think? And I ask them, how do you feel? How do you feel about it? You know, and to try to help them to make the decision on based on what they're hearing and what they're seeing. Because I, of course, I'm not there to, you know, to witness what they're describing.
And it's anonymous. It is
anonymous. I will say that the person who is you're reporting against does have a right to see the report. Mm. So if you want to remain anonymous when making a report, I would just suggest you make sure you choose the language that you're putting into the report so it doesn't come back to you specifically. Because if you say, you know, hey, I see this going on at my neighbor's house, then your neighbor's going to know that.
It's one of the neighbors.
Exactly. Yeah. So just, you know, make sure that the wording is appropriately used to remain anonymous.
So the ACEs, the Adverse Childhood Experience, and then we talked about the HOPE, which is Healthy Outcome Positive Experiences.
Yes.
How do you overcome those adverse ones with positive ones?
So with the positive experiences, it's going to be all of those built up positive childhood experiences, that building that village, so to speak, around the child, around the family, making sure they're connected into their community. We work through something that's called protective factors, those five protective factors, and they are parental resilience, social connections, knowledge of parenting and child development, concrete support in times of needs, and social and emotional competence of children. And the concrete support in times of need and those social connections, those are, like I said, the community resource directory that's out there, knowing what programs and services that exist in the community and how to access them. Because when we get into a situation where we need something, you know, maybe what that family is experiencing, maybe what that child is experiencing is not neglect, but it's poverty. It looks very similar. So how can we help that family seek out those programs and services that are out there to help reduce that level of poverty that they may be living under that would help the situation that those children are in?
So there's a resource people can contact?
Exactly. And they can look for Wexford and Maasauke County. They can go to that resource directory and navigate through that. To find out like exactly what it is that they're looking for.
And where do they go?
It is www.wexfordmaasauke.org. And then throughout the state, there's also 211 that they can call. They can call like maybe their local health department just to ask like what type of programs and services are in the area. Because that's going to be the other thing. They're named different in different counties and such. So,
but the state has a 211 that somebody can call and they can get lots of information from?
Yep. 211 is like 911, but it's for community programs and services.
Well, that's something we really need to know.
Yeah.
Okay. So what else can you share with us that will help with prevention?
You know, primary prevention is, like I said, it's stopping it before it happens. It's recognizing it. It's seeing, you know, what can you do through education and awareness more than anything else. It's not working one-on-one with the families. And there's two other levels of prevention, which are secondary prevention, which are things like programs and services that are in the area, things that you would find on that directory. Kind of thing.
Okay.
And then tertiary prevention is a prevention level that where abuse has already happened. And those are going to be the things where protective services steps in and says, okay, this is currently going on in your family. And when protective services steps in, their goal is to try to connect the families with programs and services to help mitigate.
To help them.
Exactly. Yes, their goal is not to come in and split up the family or make things worse in any way. Their goal is to say, hey, this is what's going on. Let's see how we can help you. And that's another thing that stops people from making reports sometimes is they're like, I don't want to be the one to blame to break up a family. That is not what happens. That is truly not what happens when protective services steps in. That is not their goal. So that primary prevention piece, stopping it before it happens, it leaves us with the ability to affect so many things later on in life because there are so many medical and physical and mental things that occur later on in life that have a direct tie back to child abuse and neglect and childhood trauma.
And I just want to mention, we talked off camera about, but you might see something happening at a grocery store. And the biggest thing, I think, is, you know, approach that person, just say, you know, it looks like you're having a bad day. Mm-hmm. You know, can I do something?
Exactly.
I mean, even just, and then I've even sometimes have said to the child, I said, you having a bad day to the child. Mm-hmm. And they were crying, yes, I am.
Yes, you know? Yeah.
And just trying to take the tension away between the parent and the child.
Sure, sure. And yeah, I mean, we can always step in. And like I said, I think I said earlier, just taking that pause to give that family grace and say, you know, hey, how can I help? What's going on? And or letting them know, hey, I've been there.
Yeah,
you
that's
know?
Especially.
Yep. I have definitely been there before and this is rough. And what can I do to lend a hand? And sometimes it will be welcomed and sometimes not. So,
Yeah, I know. That's true. So, folks, if you think there's child abuse, if something's going on, it's not right, you don't feel right, please call. And this is for Michigan, the 855-444-3911. And you can be an anonymous call that just to let them know about something, okay?
Also, this is National Child Abuse Prevention Month, and you can wear blue to bring attention to that.
Yep. Every Friday is Wear Blue Day, so wear blue to show your support. And I know downtown Cadillac is lighting up the town blue for us during the month of April. And we're also asking businesses and individuals to put some blue lights in your window or maybe replace a porch light with a blue light for the month.
And there are other communities do the same thing. We'll have blue lights or
So we always use the pinwheel. The pinwheel is the national symbol of child abuse prevention. But the widespread use of those small pinwheels that we're all used to seeing, those blue and silver pinwheels, is going to start going away. And that's more for environmental reasons and cost reasons, type of things. So we're kind of looking at like what's going to replace them. It might be bigger pinwheels across the community at some point. But for now, we're doing the blue lights.
Okay. Yeah. All right, folks. Well, stay tuned because we are not done talking about some child abuse. We have another topic we're going to cover. We'll be right back.
When you're taking a trip, it's important to stay on the right road and to follow the GPS or roadmap to be sure that you get to your destination. Likewise, on your trip to heaven, it is vital to follow the roadmap, the Bible, God's positioning system. To do that, stay with Strong Tower Radio as we uplift the Bible and proclaim God's character. If you'd like to help with this mission, go to our secure website, www.strongtowerradio.org, and click on the donate button, or call 231-468-2087. We thank you and may God bless you as we proclaim God's character together.
Hi, folks. I'm Jelaine Fenner, and welcome back to Strong Tower Radio today with my co-host,
Tom Majeure.
And Tom, we have been talking about April is National Child Abuse Prevention Month. And so also in the studio joining us today is Mary Campbell. She's with Healing Private Wounds. And you're the director, correct?
Correct. Thank you.
And a question, that is an organization, a ministry, maybe both, that started right here in Wexford County.
Yes. The founder, Shirley Peterson, had her own personal story of child sexual abuse. And so then she wrote a book and found out from that book back in 2006 that there were several individuals that needed her help. And so out of that, Healing Private Wounds became a 501c3 nonprofit organization aimed at preventing and assisting with recovery of sexual abuse. Since that time, we have grown to address more issues than sexual abuse. We've also helped people with any type of traumatic experience that may need counseling or other group supports.
And so, and Tom, I might want to also, April is also Sexual Assault Awareness Month.
That's right.
So these go hand in hand.
And Mary, you'll probably share with us at the end of the program, but you have several events and awareness activities that will heighten the awareness of sexual abuse.
Yes, actually. As you said, it is Child Abuse Prevention Month and also Sexual Assault Awareness Month. And so Karen and I work hand in hand to promote awareness for these events. And so I did bring a few statistics. 80,600 were sexually assaulted or raped here in our state.
That's just in Michigan for a year?
I believe that is a Michigan statistic. It does not say on here, but 60,000 children were victims of substantiated or indicated sexual abuse. In the general public now, it says Americans, 433,648 Americans 12 years old and older were sexually assaulted or raped. And then, of course, the number's pretty high in the military as well. 18,900 experienced unwanted sexual contact. So, unfortunately, it is a prevalent problem that we have in America, and Michigan's not immune to that.
Now, I have a question because we're hearing more and more, and there was that Me Too movement, and so it's not getting any better. Is that That's what I'm kind of hearing.
Well, Karen, I think I've heard some conflicting reports that it is getting better as far as the awareness piece and actually people reporting.
Okay.
So the numbers may seem worse before they get better because more people are aware and reporting.
Well, maybe that is one thing, too. You're right. Mm-hmm. You hear, they start hearing more of this stuff, so then mm-hmm. more of it gets reported. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm older than both of you, but we didn't talk about stuff like this. And if it happened, yeah. you didn't say anything. You didn't do anything.
Right. Right. Well, and people don't want to get involved with yeah. their neighbor's issues or don't want to, you know, be perceived as telling or, you know, breaking up a family. And the fact of the matter is we need to think about stopping generational curses and generational problems, because unfortunately, if a child has been abused or neglected, later life issues tend to pop up. That's something that I did want to talk about, is that the prevalence of child abuse then leads to higher instances of substance abuse, and then substance abuse leads to incarceration. And so what we're finding just locally, that about 80% of the incarcerated they're there because of substance abuse or other issues, but come to find out, they have a history of child abuse.
They go hand in hand, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, Mary, what are the flags or indicators that sexual abuse is taking place or assault?
Okay. Well, I think just being aware of some, you know, it goes down to trauma is at the root. There are some specific telltale signs, the fight or the flight or the freeze. And if a child just stands outside of their peer group, sometimes like that's the flight or freeze response, is that they don't join in with their peers. They may just seem quiet and shy, and
that's, they say yeah. it's shy.
Yeah. Yeah. Because
I can remember years ago here in the Cadillac area, a family, they had a daughter, and she wouldn't look at you in the eye when she would talk. She'd always have her head down. I mean, mm-hmm. I'd see her at church.
Mm-hmm.
And one time the thought come to me, I wonder if she was being sexually abused. I didn't do anything, unfortunately, but that's what I thought.
And it's not always abuse. It's just being that one person that pays attention mm-hmm. and is and offers their friendship, their help.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, to kind of add to that, it a lot of times what it comes down to is you're really just watching for a change in your child's behavior. You know your child best as their parent. You know, are they normally loud and outgoing and boisterous, or are they normally quiet and reserved? So is there going to be any kind of change in their behavior? Are they potty trained and now all of a sudden they're back to bedwetting? Mm. You know, those type of changes in their everyday behaviors should always be questioned. And is it always sexual abuse? No, it's not. Maybe there's something else going on. Maybe they're just worried about something. But to kind of notice those changes and to be able to start asking questions and keep an open eye, you know, when did it start? When did you notice it starting? What was the difference in their routine that could have brought the change on? All of those type of things, just making sure that you're staying connected with your child.
So, Mary, what is awareness? I mean, like she, you know, Karen just talked about more things that not just parents, but, you know, other people. I mean, mm-hmm. I know teachers and doctors, nurses, but then like right. me, I'm just, like I just said, I saw this and mm-hmm. I kind of wondered, but I didn't do anything about it.
Right.
What should I have done about it?
Well, and that's difficult, especially if it's a stranger you don't know, somebody you see in the store, or, you know, somebody that you don't have regular contact with. It's really hard to make that judgment call. And I did hear Karen say to report anything that you suspect, because then it's somebody else's, it's falls in somebody else's lap to investigate and to see if that's, you know, if your concerns, if your gut feelings are substantiated, that's, you know, that's why you need to report it.
So, like healing private wounds, you have, if somebody wants to talk to somebody about this, whether it's a young person or an adult, maybe that had an experience mm-hmm. and never talked about it, mm-hmm. they can call you?
Yes.
And what's that number?
It's 231-846-4495. 231-846-4495.
Okay. And somebody could call and just tell, either way, that they maybe suspect there might be mm-hmm. something going on with somebody or neighbor or whatever. Or they've had an experience maybe 50 years ago, like we talked
Correct.
Earlier,
mm-hmm.
and never did anything about it, and it's affected their whole life.
Yes.
They can come and talk to you.
Yes. And we do have, all of our services are free and confidential. We have volunteer counselors, and so we also have groups, so support groups for recovery. We have mentorships available.
So you're saying services.
Yep.
So mm-hmm. mentors, you have meetings? I don't know.
Yeah, we do. We have several different groups available. We call our group Grow Group because it's growing through the abuse trauma. And it sometimes helps to just have people that have experienced the same similar things that you've experienced, because maybe that person has disclosed that this happened to them and people didn't believe them, mm-hmm. or they just didn't understand what you went through. And so sometimes it helps to have peers that can truly understand what you're going through.
Mm-hmm. So most everybody at Healing Private Rooms has had an experience. You have volunteers.
Yes, we do have volunteers. Not everyone has had a personal experience that volunteers there, obviously, but they have to have a heart for this ministry of helping people heal from past traumas. And a lot of the trauma experiences produce the same types of results. So it's not necessarily just sexual abuse trauma, any kind of child abuse trauma or neglect, even, and even poverty, like Karen had mentioned earlier, can produce that chronic stress, and chronic stress over time can produce trauma. And I don't know, Karen, if you talked at all about what that does to the brain, actually, and brain development.
Mm-hmm. We talked a little bit about that, especially happening in early childhood and all of the brain development that's going on at that time, and how it has that lifelong effect and affects both physical and mental health attributes later on in life. And, you know, it's very common for someone who has experienced that chronic trauma in early childhood, and especially when you're talking about child sexual abuse, child sexual assault, to kind of think that, you know, I'm out of that situation now, I'm okay, I'm fine, all of that. And you may go on for years or even decades thinking that you are fine and you have it under control. And you may reach a point one time where things just don't seem right. I mean, I would just encourage you just reach out and get help, because that stays with you for your lifetime. Mm-hmm. It doesn't go away. It doesn't stop just because you're not in the situation anymore. It does become part of who you are and how mm-hmm. you feel about yourself and what you think about yourself, how you react to others, and how you raise your children.
That's what I'm thinking. I was just
yep.
thinking,
right.
especially about, you know, how you are going to talk to your kids, or sometimes, you know, we hear about helicopter parenting.
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes that might be because of the trauma they've mm-hmm. had in their
sure.
life.
How's that
affecting the kids?
Yeah. Sure. I can speak, somewhat personally on that issue. I was raised a single mom, five mm-hmm. kids, a lot of chronic stress. I remember my mom calling the grandparents and crying and saying, we don't have enough food to get by. And my grandparents would come and drop off food. And just watching my mom go through that whole anxiety depression cycle, really did affect me, and I didn't realize how much it affected me until I had my own children. Mm-hmm. And then I was trying to figure out how to raise them without the anxiety and
protect them.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, and how to protect them. And you know what I realized was I didn't really know how to parent. Yep. And so my first child, I always call her my guinea pig child, because I was overbearing and very controlling. And you're going to go here. You're not going to stay the night anywhere. You're going to, you know. Mm-hmm. And so she didn't have very, very many childhood experience outside of our home. And that caused rebellion later mm-hmm. on in life. So, you know, And I often think if my mom would have had somebody come alongside her and just support her and help her, that the outcomes would have been so different.
Well, and the one thing that I think about is, and when I said earlier, they're doing the best they know how at the time. Mm-hmm. And so when you're that person, not sexual abuse, but with the neglect or whatever, you know, yelling, mm-hmm. screaming. Mm-hmm. Then you need to, when you know, the child's getting older, you need to let them know that you're sorry. I didn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how, like you said, you really didn't know how to parent. Mm-hmm. And most parents don't know how. Even after they've had yeah. children.
No. Yeah. But that aspect of apologizing to your child is pretty foreign to a lot of people as well. Yes. They think, you know, you don't apologize to your child for something like that. And you absolutely do. And it's opening up that conversation.
Yes.
and making sure that they're aware. But what you guys are talking about too, like Mary, you're saying, like you wish your mom had someone that she can turn to and stuff like that. That's that mentoring piece mm-hmm. that we're talking about that mm-hmm. falls within that primary prevention mm-hmm. Aspect that, you know, I know Healing Private Wounds does, the Child Protection Council does. We work within that primary prevention piece in looking at how can we support the families as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'd like to talk to Karen about the indicators. When we were talking about child abuse, but also sexual abuse, what flags the don't feel right do you, can you advise people to be that are outsiders and want to be helpful? It doesn't feel right. What are those indicators that you see from your experience?
Are you talking about when it comes specifically to child sexual abuse?
Correct.
It's a difficult one because I think different families have different levels of closeness and relationship sometimes. And what might seem odd to one family is not necessarily odd to another family.
So what you're saying is there one family may have healthy touch, which may be interpreted as unhealthy touch.
Correct. I know, like, you know, for my granddaughters, they love to have their backs rubbed. They love to have their shoulders rubbed and massaged and stuff like that. And to know that, okay, I'm giving my granddaughter a back rub and massaging her shoulders, that may seem odd to someone else. But how are you doing that? You know, she is fully clothed. You know, I'm doing it over her clothes. I'm those
and you're
type
doing
of
it
things.
More in public.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, these things are not, I was just going to say, they're not being done in private behind closed doors, all of those kind of things.
And consent. That's a major
yes.
thing
yes.
to teach mm-hmm. children that they have the power to give consent to be touched. Whether it's a hug, a back rub, you know, but consent is a very powerful word, no matter what age you are.
Well, that's why the thing about the sexual assault awareness is it doesn't matter how old you are. You know, because women all the time, like, you know, somebody, you know, it ends up being rape. I never agreed. I never suggested that it's okay.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that actually leads us to our Walk for Hope. Actually, this was born out of something called Denim Day. And is it okay if I just talk about what Denim Day is?
Absolutely.
Okay. So Denim Day is a story that began in Italy in 1992 when an 18-year-old girl was raped by her 45-year-old driving instructor who took her on her very first driving lesson. He took her to an isolated road, pulled her out of the car, removed her jeans, and raped her. She reported the rape, and the perpetrator was arrested and convicted. But years later, while serving his sentence, he appealed the conviction, claiming that they had consensual sex. The Italian Supreme Court overturned the conviction, and the perpetrator was released. The argument was that because the victim was wearing very tight jeans, she had to help him remove them, thereby implying consent. That's where the term the jeans alibi was born. And so now every year, the last Wednesday of the month of April, it's called Denim Day.
Is this a national thing?
Yep.
That's actually international.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. International.
It is an international thing. And so locally in Cadillac, Michigan, we are organizing a walk for hope where everyone is encouraged to wear their jeans.
Whether they're tight or not.
They're tight or not. And walk with us. And that's happening on Wednesday, April 24th, 11:30. We're going to gather at the Shea Station at the City Park and walk for a couple of blocks and end up at the Cadillac First Presbyterian Church for a brief message and lunch before you go back to your work day.
And so that's awareness. I mean, that's what,
yes.
This is Awareness Month. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And girls especially need to be educated because they don't understand, like, the tight jeans, the non-modest attire mm-hmm. that they wear, but that doesn't give anybody the right.
Correct. And that goes back to the consent,
yes.
You know, that consent piece. Yes, I think, would I prefer my daughters to dress modestly? Yes, I would. But I would never blame them for being mm-hmm. raped. I mean, that is a decision that another individual forces upon someone else.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. No means no.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing, especially them with children, that's why they need to be educated.
Yes.
What are some of those points of what no, what are simple things that our listeners can share with their children to educate them what no means or ways to communicate
okay.
that?
Okay. So the school program that Shirley developed has the acronym SRT. And so S means stop, and we mm-hmm. teach them to say in a very loud voice and forcefully, stop, if they're feeling uncomfortably touched. And then run, so mm-hmm. try to get away from the situation as best as possible. And then tell, and keep telling until somebody believes you and makes the abuse stop. So SRT is what we teach the kids. And we also teach them, you know, what their private parts are, you know, and girls, it's their breasts, vagina, and buttocks. And then boys, it's their penis and buttocks. And so we teach them the proper words because we've heard stories where kids have reported abuse, but they only were taught to call it a cookie. Mm. So my uncle or grandpa likes to play with my cookie.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And nobody took it very seriously until they realized what cookie actually meant.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's why, I mean, education is so important. And that's what mm-hmm. we, you know, need to be educating adults and children.
Mm-hmm.
And then they need help. That's what, Karen, you talked about, the mentoring. Mm-hmm. We are a Christian radio station. It's so important to have a church family.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that everybody in church is a safe person. That's why the education.
Mm-hmm. 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 Yep. And I think it does begin in the home. And we're hoping that these are safe homes that we're going into and educating the parents and out in the community educating the parents to have the tools that they need for this. But if it's not a safe home, that's why it's so important to go into the schools and teach the kids about body autonomy and what they can do to help protect themselves.
Now, does Healing Private Wounds have a website?
Yes, just healingprivatewounds.org.
Okay. And then if somebody is online, there's an email.
Yes. And they can fill out a request for information. We have multiple tools and tips for parents that we can mail if they're not in our local area, you know. And then we also, we would have a mentor call somebody if they wanted to talk.
Okay. So, yes, because, you know, we're all over Michigan and we have a couple stations. Or we will have a couple stations in Illinois, but we're also streaming, so anybody, you know, could hear this. So they can always call you if they're out of the area, and maybe you can give them some other numbers
course,
or websites.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think we were talking a little bit earlier about that body safety education piece for children just being so important, and that we have to make sure that we keep in mind that it's not sexual education that we're trying to provide to children. It's body safety education to try to teach them, like what Mary was saying, and how to say no and how to tell and that sort of thing.
Well, and that, yeah, because you use the correct, you know, words, terms on the body parts.
Yeah.
And that is so important because, like you said, you know, your parents maybe will say something different or they don't want to say the word penis.
Well, in the education piece of it too actually starts at birth for parents. And that starting at birth, that very young age, it's more on the parents making sure that they knew who their child is with and who they're around and everything that's happening and that they're aware of who they're spending time with and that safety piece. And then as the child starts getting older, then it actually then starts incorporating the child and teaching them that body safety language and sorts. But it's never too young. They're never too young to learn. It goes right on through high school.
And kids, once they learn the proper things, they can hear other kids talking and saying something. Those kids could educate those kids.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
We were just in a local school last week, and I won't say which school just for privacy reasons, but those kids asked great questions. This was in a third grade classroom, and they are very aware at that age. And, you know, one child rose their hand and said, "What if my friend tells me that something happened? What should I do then?" Mm. Or what if my safe people are the ones hurting me? And, you know, that those were great questions. And we answer them to the best of our ability. And so in that instance, if a friend tells you that something happened and they say, "You can't tell because I'll get in trouble or I won't be your friend anymore," we encourage them to tell anyway, and, you know, your friend will understand in time that you were just trying to protect them.
Right. Well, folks, April is National Child Abuse Prevention Month, as well as Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and that's what we've been talking about. These are tough topics to talk about, sensitive, but it's things that needs to be done. It needs to be talked about and said. And so if you have any questions, you can get a hold of Mary at Healing Private Wounds, and that phone number is?
It's 231-846-4495. 231-846-4495.
Okay. Or the website?
HealingPrivateWounds.org.
And Karen, for the child abuse, what's the website?
Our website is WexfordMisakiCPC.com, or anybody can send me an email as well, which is WexfordMisaki.CPC@gmail.com.
Oh, okay. All right, folks. So if you have any questions, you need to pray about this. If you see something, please
report
do
it.
Something. Yes, report it. And that's, I mean, we're hearing that more and more about all kinds of things. You need to, if you see it, you need to do something about it. You know, report it. Let others know. So thank you, ladies, for being here and talking, helping with sensitive topics that need to be addressed.
Thank you.
Have a good day, folks.
Bye now.